This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. It's World Cancer Day today, and the theme this year is Not Beyond Us. When it comes to fighting a disease like cancer, a message that we aren't powerless is incredibly important. Informing us of the key messages is Professor Teo Soo Hwang of CARIF. CARIF is the Cancer Research Initiatives Foundation. To tell us more, shed more light on the four pillars of World Cancer Day. Welcome to the show, Professor Teo. How are you today?
I'm excellent. Thank you very much, Meera, and thank you for having me on the show.
You're most welcome. You know, Professor, I'm going to kick off this discussion today with a piece of research that was published in Science that suggested that most cancer types are just down to bad luck. What can you tell us about the research methodology? Because when I read it, I thought to myself, this is horrible. For all the work that people are doing in the area of cancer, this just kills it all, almost. What you're saying is it's beyond your control, really. What were your thoughts when you read it?
Absolutely right, Meera. I think when we read that article, I think to put context, you know, there are many scientific publications and journals in the world, and Science, the journal called Science, is really top of its league. So it's probably one of the most impactful scientific journals. Add on to that, that this is the top cancer researcher in the world. So he's the what we call the most cited cancer researcher. So in other words, if you were to pile up all of the number of times that you cite his work in your publication, then he's number one. So Bert Vogelstein from Johns Hopkins is number one in, or close to number one in terms of cancer researchers' impact. So for Bert to publish an article that says that using a mathematical model, he's been able to demonstrate that maybe about 65% of the variation, that means why some tissues are more likely to develop cancer and why some tissues are not likely or less likely to develop cancer, is down to bad luck, was really something that really shocked the world in terms of all the way down from the top to the bottom. You know, for cancer organizations like the UICC and the International Agency for Research into Cancer, they immediately issued press releases to counter that statement, to really try and get it right in terms of how the media was interpreting that message. Mm-hmm. And then for all other organizations, it was reeling with shock, you know, thinking about, is this really what the message they're going to send out there? So let's look down at some of the details of this actual study. So for a really long time, a question that always arises is, why is some cancer more common than others? So for example, why is leukemia more common than a thyroid cancer? Why are osteosarcomas less likely to happen than cancers of the prostate or breast and so on and so forth? Why is that the case? I think what is really important to know is that if you look at the top 10 cancers in the world, then you can attribute a significant proportion of it to three things. The first is viruses. So human papilloma virus is linked not just to cervical cancer, but also to the various types of head and neck cancers. Then the second is, of course, lifestyle factors. So in other words, what you eat and what you do with your lifestyle. Top of that, of course, is tobacco. Second of that is what you eat in terms of your dietary intake of red meat in particular. And then the third most common reason is the hormonal tissues. So tissues like breast cancer or prostate tissue and ovarian tissue are things that, because they are the tissue that responds to hormones, and hormones drive cells to divide and to grow, that's the third big class of cancers. So if you look then at this paper itself, then what is this paper actually trying to say? This paper is trying to say, well, other than these top cancers, why is it that some are more common than others? So if you were to look at all of the rare cancers, why are those cancers rare? You know, if, for example, your colon is exposed to the same intake in red meat as your small intestine is exposed to the same red meat that you eat compared to the large intestine, then why do you get colorectal cancer much more common than small intestine cancer? Mm-hmm. That's what it was trying to say. And another example would be, if you have genetic predisposition to cancer, and like Angelina Jolie, you inherited a gene that puts you at higher risk. This gene is present throughout your body. It is involved in how cells respond to DNA damage. But why is it that individuals are more likely to get breast cancer and not skin cancer or tongue cancer or some other cancer? Why is it breast cancer and ovarian cancer? So this study was really targeted at answering the question of why some cells are more susceptible to cancer than others. And the main conclusion was because these cells are more likely to be dividing and proliferating, and in the process of dividing and proliferating, it accumulates genetic changes, and those genetic changes, by luck, may happen to be more likely to be the ones that divide into cancer. So in other words, if your neuronal cells, your brain cells, and your stem cells, in your notochord cells, for example, you know, your spinal cord cells don't divide very often, then maybe they're not likely to develop into cancer. And there's some reason in believing that. And that knowledge has been known for many, many years. But how this was picked up by the media was to say that 65% of the difference in cancer is because of bad luck. And therefore, the implication suggests that let's forget all of the health advice that we've been giving out for years, and let's go out and smoke a cigarette and eat as much burgers as we would like and stop exercising and just continue status quo doing what we think we will enjoy and c'est la vie, it's bad luck. I think that all of the public health individuals are up in arms because this is really not the best advice to be giving in the beginning of 2015.
But isn't it luck? I mean, whether or not your tissues or your cells are, you know, dividing and, you know, altering in terms of its form, mutating,
yes,
right? It's something that's beyond our control.
To some extent, yes. But I think that does explain some variation in terms of why some individuals get cancer and others don't. There is some element of luck, fully accept.
Okay.
There is also an element of luck for individuals who have all of the risk factors. So, for example, if you were to take all of the smokers in the world, not all of them will develop lung cancer. All of the smokers know that, which is why most smokers will say, I can continue to smoke because I might be in the lucky few that won't actually get lung cancer. But what you need to know is that this is almost like playing a game of dice with your own life, right? You know, if, for example, you have a 1 in 3 chance of developing cancer or dying of cancer in your lifetime, then what you're effectively doing is instead of making it 1 in 3, it might be a 8 out of 10 chance. So in other words, rather than playing with a dice and making it luck that is evenly loaded, you are now loading your dices so that it's going to come out sixes all of the time. It's going to come out with one answer all of the time, which is that you're very likely to get cancer.
And which brings me back to maybe it's not so much luck, it's just theory of probabilities, really. if you think about it, you know, the dice, you've got to contribute. You have some control over that theory of probability. Some control.
You have some control, but we are still humans.
Of course. There is
only a limit to the amount of control that we have in our lives. We all accept that. And I think particularly in the Asian faith, that's very strong. But as a population, if we don't take this seriously, then the reality is, you know, cancer is already killing more people in their productive age group, if you like, than any other disease, other than accidents, and accidents you don't call a disease. But effectively, we really need to take this seriously, because in Malaysia, for example, if you look at breast cancer, then the average age for breast cancer is still in the late 40s or early 50s. And this is at an age where I'm in my 40s and my children are still in primary school or early secondary school. How many women are we going to lose to breast cancer if we say it's just bad luck? We can't. We can't do that. How many men are we going to lose to lung cancer if we just say it's bad luck and we don't take seriously any prevention measures? I think we really need to think about it from a public health perspective, that our burden of cancer is not going to go away if we don't take some active steps. I think we have to ask whether the message cancer is just bad luck empowers individuals to make a difference and to ensure that we load the dices so that we are less likely to come up with the bad luck scenario. Or are we going to try and empower ourselves and say, okay, let's do what we can to ensure that our dice is loaded in the opposite direction, that we reduce our risk, and that we have a best chance of surviving cancer.
So there were positive messages in that research. It's just that we read it wrong. The media read it wrong.
Absolutely. I think what they were trying to get across in this message was to say that for some cancers, we're not likely to be able to find a way in which we can prevent it because the major drivers is just the fact that the cells are dividing. And for these cancers, we really should focus on early detection, screening, and better treatment. Let's focus on better treatment for these cancers. And this includes things like sarcomas, some thyroid cancers, and so on and so forth. We really need to focus on identifying better cures for these cancers. For other cancers, the component of randomness or the component of bad luck is much smaller. So if you really read the paper, what you'll see is that for lung cancer, for colon cancer, for liver cancer, all of the cancers that we know are associated with risk factors, then the component which is attributed to randomness and bad luck is small, which basically means that for these, let's focus on primary prevention. Get rid of the risk factors. Get rid of smoking. Get rid of unhealthy lifestyles. Focus on actually making sure that more people don't get cancer. Prevent cancer before it actually happens.
Okay. And when you talk about prevention of cancer, right, Professor, what does it mean to say that 2/3 of cancers are theoretically preventable? This is the flip side of the bad luck now. This
Absolutely.
Is a very positive message, actually.
Yes. So we, I think we need to look at the burden of cancer. Isn't every single tissue is likely to develop into a cancer? So let's look at the 10 most common cancers, right? If you look at breast cancer, for example, then one of the most common cancers. If you look at cervical cancer, okay, let's deal with all of the viruses ones first, okay? So for all the viral-driven cancers, you have human papilloma virus that drives cervical cancer. And cervical cancer is the second most common cancer in the world among women. And therefore, cervical cancer is a very, very good message. A, we can prevent women from getting cervical cancer using the human papilloma virus. B, through the pap smear, we can detect cervical cancer at the early stage and ensure that we have survivors rather than victims of cervical cancer. I mean, that's such a good message out there. So if we just calculate theoretically, if every single woman, every single child in this world had access to the HPV vaccine now, and every woman had access to the the pap smear, then we would be able to prevent probably 90% or even more of the cervical cancers in this world. So in theory, it's preventable. But we're not achieving it. Why are we not achieving it? Well, uptake of cervical cancer, pap smear, is really low in in our population. It is very low uptake of pap smear. So although we talk about the possibility that we can prevent cervical cancer deaths, we're in reality not doing it because women are not coming forward for a pap smear. In terms of a vaccination, we will get there within the next generation, provided that as we are doing with the Malaysian government, we're now vaccinating all girls at the age of 13 with a HPV vaccine. So that's viruses. What is in theory possible is calculated on the basis of what we know about the disease. But in practice, whether it's achievable really requires all of us, ordinary Malaysians, not the government, not just the government. The government is doing what they can, but it's actually about whether each of us as average individuals are actually taking the right action to be able to take forward. So that's number one, that's viruses. So it's not just the human papilloma virus, but it's also the hepatitis B virus. And the hepatitis B virus is particularly important for liver cancer in our population because combined with alcohol and liver cirrhosis, then it increases our risk to liver cancer. We have another virus for which we don't have a vaccine, that's the Epstein-Barr virus. And in theory, if we had a vaccine for the Epstein-Barr virus, then potentially we can reduce the burden of the third most common cancer among men in Malaysia. I think that's really important, that viruses drive a big component of deaths due to cancer. The second component is lifestyle variables. So smoking, dietary changes. You know, Mira, there's a straight line relationship between the amount of red meat that countries consume and the amount of colorectal cancers that are present in that country. So if you look at countries like India, that largely has a vegetarian diet in most parts of India, colorectal cancer almost doesn't exist. Compared to New Zealand, that has one of the highest incidence of colorectal cancer, the consumption of red meat is really high. So there's a straight line relationship. But we don't care, do we? Our diet is changing at a dramatic rate where we are increasing week on week, the amount of meat, that red meat that we're eating. Mm-hmm. And we don't really think about whether it's increasing our risk of colorectal cancer because we enjoy our food too much.
Of course.
Yeah. If we take lung cancer, then similarly, the tobacco, getting rid of tobacco in this country would result in a 90% reduction in lung cancer incidence and reductions in other cancers as well, things like bladder cancer and so on. And to all of the smokers out there who say that, well, I know I'm not going to get lung cancer, that's true, but you might keel over and die from heart disease instead. And that's probably going to be a bigger killer that's associated with smoking. But what we are able to do in terms of theory, that two-thirds of cancers is preventable, is not happening in practice. It's really not happening in practice because we don't seriously take cancer prevention in our stride. We don't really take it part of our day-to-day mantra.
What are we doing wrong? Are we speaking the wrong language? Should we be more empowering? Should we be using the right words to, you know, portray cancer in a more positive light as opposed to almost like a death sentence? We'll come back and discuss that up next. If you have a question for Professor Teo Soo Hwang from CARIF, we're discussing the tenets for World Cancer Day, which is today actually, health systems, lifestyle choices, achieving treatment for all, as well as maximizing your quality life, which are some of the focus for this year's World Cancer Day. So we'll come back and discuss that up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment. Professor Teo Soo Hwang from the Cancer Research Initiatives Foundation in the studio with me. We're discussing World Cancer Day 2015. It's a huge task ahead, isn't it, Professor, in terms of talking about cancer? I think everyone's been talking about cancer, but as you said, two-thirds are preventable. We know the science, we know the research. It has been proven very clearly as to what we can avoid and what we can do to, you know, prevent cancer. But the messages don't seem to be getting through. What are we doing wrong?
I think you put your finger on the pulse again, Mira, in really highlighting that the way we've approached cancer messaging so far has always been around fear. We call it the big C. We call it other things, you know, the thing that we don't want to talk about. There's a lot of stigma around cancer. We've got to stop doing that. We really have to stop not focusing on the fearful components, but thinking about what can we do to make the big C a little C. And I really like the message that the UICC have come up with this year. The tagline for the International Union Against Cancer is "Not Beyond Us." What does that say to us? Well, it could mean many things. The cure is not beyond us. Prevention of cancer is not beyond us, but it's all within reach. And I think as a community, we need to start focusing on the positives. What have we actually achieved? You know, I don't like, in a sense, it's almost taboo to mention Lance Armstrong in the media because of all of the debacle regarding the Tour de France and etc. But I think what he stood for was to kind of say that actually for a cancer like testicular cancer, we have a cure. He can come back from testicular cancer and with help still win the Tour de France. Let's not take that away. There are survivors out there for cancers for which 50 years ago that would not have happened. And that's not just happening for rare cancers like testicular cancer. It's also happening for leukemias. It's also happening for breast cancers where survival is improving, not by a little bit, but by a very marked amount for cancers that we are starting to tackle. So let's get the correct information out there that survival due to cancer is improving and has improved significantly in the past 50 years.
I'm just going to stop you there for a second as far as Lance Armstrong is concerned, because I remember speaking to a survivor of testicular cancer and he told me he absolutely despised Lance Armstrong because he felt that as a testicular cancer survivor, he had to be bigger and better. And that was the message that Lance Armstrong was giving out to him. And he was very hard on himself when, in fact, reality is you don't necessarily have to push yourself that far to be bigger and better. You can be bigger and better, but not to that extent. And he was struggling with it. He was coping with it. He really was struggling with it. And he said, you know what, when the whole debacle came through, I thought to myself, you know, it wasn't real. it wasn't real at the end of the day. And this is coming from a cancer survivor himself.
I cannot pretend to know how each cancer survivor goes through their own personal journey. And I think it'll be a real insult to try and do that. Yeah. Because for every single patient, it is different. But for, I think what I'm heartened by is the number of survivors that are out there putting their message out that you can survive this. There's not beyond us. I think we need more Malaysians to join that picture. It would be really nice to have more Malaysians out there because there's nothing better than saying, I'm here. I'm here. I'm not anywhere. I'm not kind of 6 feet under. I'm here. I'm a survivor. Right? And that empowers people to a phenomenal degree. So in a hospital, for example, nothing gives the patient who is about to face surgery more power than the nurse saying, I have cancer too, but I'm still here. I'm taking care of you. I know what I'm doing and it'll be fine. Doesn't matter whether that was a nurse or it was a survivor providing that support, but we need to do that more. And we cannot do that when we think of cancer as a stigma and when we think of cancer as being infectious or when we think that cancer is bad luck and karma and the rest of it. We need to really grab the bull by the horns and basically say it is something that's not beyond us. Let's stand up together and count what achievements we've made so that it can be a message of hope. It is a tempered message of hope because we're not there yet in terms of finding a cure for all cancers. I'm not going to kid ourselves. A lot of the new therapies are expensive and they may only provide a few months of additional survival. But the fact is we are making progress. Let's focus on making progress. So number one, for certain cancers, we are able to cure those cancers already and it wasn't possible 30 to 50 years ago. Number two, we're making discoveries in cancer research much, much faster than they were previously. So, for example, a drug that is used in breast cancer, Herceptin, took nearly 30 years for development. You know, the immunotherapies, which were first, that really was hailed as a breakthrough in cancer research 2 years ago, really started development almost 35 years ago. But if you look at a lung cancer treatment, crizotinib, the first discovery of that genetic alteration was more probably about 10 years ago, and we already have something that's improving the survival of lung cancer patients. So we're getting faster and better at finding a cure for cancer. And I think we need to get behind that, you know, really get behind that effort to find a cure for cancer so that we can accelerate progress and not drag ourselves back down. You know, there's I'm not sure you're aware of the whole social media discussion at the moment about the human papillomavirus vaccination. There's a whole debate going on around in social media that's saying, oh, do you know the Japanese government have taken it off and they're not going to do that? And there's a lot of side effects and the whole usual story behind vaccination and what the side effects of vaccination actually are. And there's a lot of myths that have gone around to scare people into saying, please don't go for the vaccination. But let's focus on the positive. The positive is, for the second most common cancer in the world, we can now say, let's get rid of it. Let's wipe it off the face of our future generations. How much more positive can we do that? We're not doing that. Instead of which, we're focusing on the small stories that most of which are not even validated.
Yeah, and we've forgotten how we wiped out smallpox.
Absolutely. Very quickly forgotten how we wiped out... Yeah,
and polio, to a certain extent.
Yes. Yeah. That's absolutely true. So let's focus on what does not beyond us actually mean. Not beyond us means let's stop looking at the glass as half empty and let's focus on the glass half full. Let's focus on the task at hand that, yes, in theory, 2/3 of cancers are preventable, but we're not doing what needs to happen. What does the average Malaysian need to do? If you're a smoker, give up smoking. If you're a woman with a daughter, consider HPV vaccination. It's going to make a difference. If you're thinking about your diet, don't think just about supplements. Think about how much red meat you're eating. Think about how much exercise you're doing. And just going to the fridge to get a drink doesn't constitute exercise. But really think about how much exercise are we actually doing that will make a difference.
Okay, and just to move on the cost of living, I mean, it is continuing to go up, Professor. It's been an area of huge concern, really. We have GST coming on April the 1st. We do know medicines are going to cost more in terms of the cost of living. does it make the cost of fighting cancer even more an uphill task for many of us? Both for the patient and the institutions, because cost is going up. It is rising.
I think, it is very true that cost is rising. But we need to think about how we're focusing on reducing costs. Cost of cancer care isn't just how much you can afford to pay for treatment for every one individual that's sitting in front of you. That is very, very important. But it's also about how many people can you ensure doesn't sit on that doctor's chair being told that they have cancer in the first place. Maybe that's an unaccounted for cost that we don't even think about, right? Let's think about that a little bit. How much does it cost for us to cut red meat bit by bit from our diet? How much does it cost for us to take smoking cigarettes off of our personal allowance every month? A lot. A huge amount. Let's not just say, I'll only think about cost of cancer care when I'm a patient. No, actually, the amount that will cost is a small fraction of what you could do in terms of your whole life, you know, in terms of how you structure your whole life to lead a healthier lifestyle, not just for preventing cancer, but for preventing heart disease, diabetes, and so on. Malaysians are the most obese people in Southeast Asia. How embarrassing is that?
Yes, absolutely.
44% of Malaysians are fat and obese. That is terrible. We were never like that. How did we become the fattest country in Southeast Asia? Why is there diabetes at a phenomenal rate? Why are we putting ourselves through all of these? So in times of economic duress, maybe we're not at times of economic duress, but as we think about our budgets this year, I would like to encourage everyone not just to kind of take the knee-jerk reaction and say, oh, cost of treatment is going to be really expensive and cost of care, etc., is going to be really expensive, but think about it from their own prevention standpoint. What can Malaysians do? What can you do that ensures that you take this opportunity to, when budgets are tight, to think about how will you spend your money towards your healthcare for the future? How do you make sure that prevention is better than cure? Don't give it lip service, but seriously think about how are we going to get make sure that prevention is better than cure.
What about treatment for all as far as cancer is concerned? I mean, with such a variety of cancer treatments available, and you did mention earlier on, there are some that are extremely costly. What's the difference between what is of the top line and what is widely available?
There will always be disparities in care. It doesn't matter whether you're a developed country or a developing country, there will always be disparities in care. You know, Obama came in with the Obama Healthcare Act really to try and address disparities in care. And this is the world's largest, most wealthy country in the world, and they still have disparities in care. So this will exist in Malaysia. I think the notion of universal healthcare is a really tough one and one that we aspire to. And I would say that there are many steps within the National Cancer Control Plan that helps or that tries to achieve that. So, for example, for standard chemotherapy, patients should have access to standard chemotherapy wherever they live in Malaysia. Patients don't always have access to radiotherapy wherever they live in Malaysia, but that's part of the cancer blueprint, and hopefully that will come about in the near future. And then we have the National Cancer Institute, or the new hospital that has been set up in Putrajaya, that will provide more high-end state-of-the-art facilities so that it's not just available to the private patients who can pay, but also to public patients and who can't afford to pay but nonetheless can get access to services. But there's a big gap between where we are today and where we need to be if we want to improve survival. We can never catch up with all of the money that we need. You know, for Singapore even, they don't provide any of the targeted therapies, as far as I know, completely on the government. You have to withdraw it from your EPF or your medical savings funds in order to pay for those, or you have to get charitable funding to pay for targeted therapy. The reality is the healthcare system is there to ensure that there's basic provisions for everyone. And in a system that is bursting at its seam because of all of the non-communicable diseases, diabetes, heart disease, and so on and so forth, of course we cannot afford to be able to provide the top-end, most expensive targeted therapy to all patients who deserve it. But we're all at fault. We're really all at fault because we should in the first place be taking prevention more seriously. We should be thinking more seriously whether our healthcare budget should increase from 4 to 6% of our GDP to a much larger number. I think it is 13 to 16% in most developed countries. If we are going to claim to be a developed country by the year 2020, then stepwise, we need to start to make incremental progression from 4 to 6%, hopefully to closer to 12%. How are we going to get there? Are we serious about doing this?
And finally, to your area of interest, what would you like people to understand about the genetics of cancer? And this is something, you know, research is growing tremendously at a fast pace. As you said, Angelina Jolie, very much at the forefront of the genetics of cancer. And you work very much in this area. How are our genes affected? What are the odds of having the disease someday in terms of genetics?
I think the majority of cancer patients do not develop cancer because of an inherited gene. The majority of cancer patients develop cancer because of an environmental factor, a viral infection, or because in some cases, particularly for the rare cancers, it just was a random mutation that took place as part of cell division. So for as a population, what we need to do is to make sure that all of us are aware of the main cancers and the main signs and symptoms of these cancers. You know, it's really worrying for me to know that of a couple of surveys that we did recently, most people can only name one symptom of breast cancer, only one. And so that about 70% of women could name lump as a symptom of breast cancer. And about one in three or 28% could name pain as a symptom of breast cancer, which is accurate to some extent if it's present with a pain with a lump is a sign of breast cancer. But breast pain without a lump is usually not due to breast cancer. And it can result in a lot of people attending or worrying about something unnecessarily. So where do we need to go in the future? I think where do we need to go in the future is for the individual that has inherited a gene that caused an increased risk to breast cancer, those are preventable. If you know it before the cancer has happened, then either through close monitoring or by chemo prevention or prophylactic surgery, we can prevent those cancers from happening. I mean, if you look at breast cancer at the moment, the message that we're putting out there is that early detection saves lives. Absolutely true. We need to get more women to be aware and do breast self-examination. And our survey suggests that only 30 to 40% of women do a regular breast self-examination. That means they don't even bother to check whether there's a lump there or not. And they should be checking every month. So how do we change that? If you now say, if you say to any person walking in the street, we found a way where we can reduce breast cancer by 10%. Would you support this initiative? And the answer is yes. And how are we going to do that? Well, we're only going to be able to do that if the individuals who have a familial risk, that means if they've got some family member that has breast cancer, comes forward for genetic counseling and genetic testing before the cancer occurs, so that we know that these cancers can then be prevented. I think we begin to prevent breast cancer, a proportion of breast cancer. How we're going to prevent the rest of breast cancer is something that CARIF is working on. What we're hoping to do is start to think about chemo prevention, start to think about lifestyle interventions. Maybe we need to revert to a time when all of us ate a lot more soy, drank a lot more tea than what we do now. And maybe the interventions need to take place in teenage girls up to the age of 25 when the risk for their lifetime is laid down. All of these things are things that require us to really think strategically. How can we make an impact? Don't just mouth what we already know, but actually take measured steps based on data to be able to make an impact for our future generations.
Fantastic. Your message this World Cancer Day.
My message is cancer is not beyond us. A, prevent cancers by, if you're a smoker, stop smoking, go and do some exercise, as well as choose what you eat carefully. Number two, early detection does save lives. So there are three cancers that we really need to think about screening: for breast cancer, for colorectal cancer, and potentially for cervical cancer. Definitely those three we should need to think about and support the initiatives that we have to find a cure for cancer. We are accelerating and getting better at finding a cure for cancer, but until we get a rally behind such a drive, we're going to fail our future generations. So let's all stand together, and cancer is not beyond us.
Thank you very much for joining me today, Professor Teo Soo Huang from the Cancer Research Initiatives Foundation, on this World Cancer Day 2015 on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.